Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. Glad you could join us today. COVID-19 cases are once again spiking in Minnesota. On Monday, the state posted its highest single-day count of new cases since December. There were 20 newly reported deaths yesterday. For some people who have had COVID-19, the symptoms can linger for months after they recover. Those lingering side effects are known as long-haul COVID, and research into the condition is still fairly new, but here's what we do know. Symptoms include persistent joint pain, fatigue, shortness of breath, brain fog, and headaches. Early studies show that anywhere between 10 and 30% of COVID patients have long-haul symptoms. And for those who do experience these long-term side effects, it can have huge impacts on their day-to-day lives. This hour, I'm talking about what long-haul COVID is and answering your questions about it. As we talk about long-haul COVID today, I want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. We want to know, have you or someone you know experienced lingering symptoms after recovering from COVID-19? Has a doctor told you that you have long-haul COVID, and how has it affected your life? What questions do you have? The phone lines are open. You can call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. In a few minutes, I'll bring in two doctors to talk about long-haul COVID. But first, I want to talk with someone who has experienced these lingering symptoms. Kirsten Johnson Nixon is a social worker who works with Minneapolis Public Schools. She was on the show a year ago when she and her entire family had COVID-19. She's also a friend of mine. Thanks for joining us today, Kirsten.
Thank you. Thank you, Angela, for having me.
Sure. When you were on the show a year ago, we talked about your entire family getting sick with COVID-19 at the same time. Your mother, your father, your husband, your three teenage sons, and you. So how is everybody doing now?
Well, I can say that we're better. Sometimes I feel like there are still some lingering things like coughs and some brain fog for me. My parents are okay, but I do think that my mom's dementia was accelerated by COVID-19 and has had lingering symptoms with that, just mentally too. My dad has a lung clot, right? A clot in his lung right now. Mm-hmm. I can't say that it's directly related to COVID, but we will never really know. He has some other issues that are going on too, but they're just things that are still problematic. But things are better for myself, my husband, and my three sons. We're doing fairly well.
All right. So, Kirsten, tell me, when did you start to realize that some of your symptoms were not going away? Because at some point you're declared recovered, but I remember you saying, like, I'm just not the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say just even like 2 months afterwards, I still felt very tired. 6 months afterwards, still tired, still have a cough. And difficulty sometimes even completing sentences because it felt like my breath wasn't there, that it was hard to talk even and carry on a conversation.
And so when we think about how this affects your life and your ability to work, you know, we mentioned that you work for Minneapolis Public Schools as a social worker. I know that you oversee a program for teenage mothers. So you're driving to schools and you're talking with and trying to counsel students. How has this impacted mm-hmm. that work?
Yeah, because it's COVID, it's been easier just because I don't have to be in so many spaces at one time. But it's a lot that you have to kind of pause and take moments, always have water, always make sure you have a cough drop, you know, just those kinds of things so that the cough and the congestion or the mood so your brain fog is not as prevalent, just taking more time.
It sounds exhausting. And so I want to know how you would describe it's affected your emotional and your mental health.
Yeah, I would say that lots of times I'm always second guessing things. I worry that things might get worse, or, you know, if someone is going to get sick again, and how that might affect our family. Just those kinds of things are just always second guessing stuff. And I don't feel like I was like that before.
And lastly, Kirsten, what care have you been able to get as you continue to go to the doctor? What are your doctors saying?
Well, my doctor said just to keep monitoring it, you know, to try to be as active as possible. And then if cough continues and it doesn't get better, then he said we would look at it differently then. But for right now, he's saying that things from my report have gotten better. So we'll just keep monitoring to see how things go.
Right.
But to stay active and to work out those cardiovascular issues that I'm experiencing.
Oh, well, Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us again to tell us about the progress and about these symptoms for long-haul COVID. I appreciate your willingness to talk to us again. That's Kirsten Johnson-Nixon, a social worker for Minneapolis Public Schools, who is a COVID long hauler. Thank you again. I'll let you get back to work.
Thank you, Angela.
I want to turn now to our two guests who are doctors. We have on the line Dr. Greg Vanishkashorn, or Dr. Van, as he is called. And Dr. Van is an occupational and aerospace medicine specialist who actually leads the COVID activities rehabilitation program at Mayo Clinic. Good morning, Dr. Van.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we also have Dr. Craig Barron on the line. And Dr. Barron is a physician and a writer based in St. Paul. Hello, Dr. Barron.
Here.
Hi. Yes, we hear you there. Welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So, Dr. Van, I'll start with you. We just heard Kirsten talk about the symptoms, but tell me, how do you describe exactly what is long-haul COVID?
Yeah, so long-haul COVID, I would say overall, is a group of symptoms that last much longer than what we normally would expect someone to experience as part of the normal recovery from COVID. And we know that the COVID infection itself, that can take anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks for people to get over. But with long-haul COVID, patients are experiencing symptoms for several months now, even almost a year out from their infection. And like Kirsten mentioned, some of the most classic symptoms that we hear about are extreme fatigue, shortness of breath, and trouble thinking. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. It seems like we're learning more and more about different symptoms every day.
Yeah, you said you're learning more every day. I mentioned that you lead the COVID activity rehabilitation program at Mayo Clinic. So what does that program do? What does that mean?
Yeah. So we have a couple of different tenets of treatment that we follow here. You know, with COVID-19, this doesn't happen in a bubble if someone gets sick with this. There can be lots of complications that occur after someone gets sick. In fact, like a blood clot or similar, or there can be other infections. So one of the first things that we do for patients who have ongoing symptoms is just to make sure that nothing else is going on that could be explaining why they're feeling that way. And once we rule those kinds of things out, then we help the person recondition appropriately. We know that any illness can result in someone being very tired and deconditioned even after just a couple of days. And this seems especially true with COVID-19 infections. But it's a careful balance that people have to strike. As Kirsten mentioned, it's easy to really do too much and push yourself too far and have a worsening of your symptoms. So we work very closely with patients using our physical and occupational therapy teams to help them recover appropriately. And along the way, if patients are experiencing symptoms like headaches or other things, we use medications and other treatments to help eliminate those symptoms as much as possible so they can concentrate on their recovery.
So you're in frequent communication with long haulers. What can you tell us about the impact of having these lingering symptoms? What are they expressing to you about how it's affecting, you know, how they're living and as they try to work at their jobs?
Yeah, that's a great question. And unfortunately, it is not a pleasant picture that we hear from our patients routinely. Of all the patients that we've seen here, approximately a third of patients report having difficulties with even some of the most basic activities of life, just like putting on your clothes in the morning or taking a shower. About 80% reported troubles with the more routine things in life, like grocery shopping, household chores, and of course, going to work, which has been an area of great concern for me and my colleagues in occupational medicine. About half of the patients that we have interacted with were back at work by the time they presented to our clinic. Mm-hmm. But it's important to remember that the average time to presentation at our clinic, that is the time from infection to when someone got help with us first, was about 3 months. So another way to look at this is about 50% of patients who are back at work still 3 months out from their infection.
Do you believe it's driving some people out of the workforce?
Unfortunately, this is a story that I have seen quite a few times already. Yes, I do think that this is a barrier for a lot of people returning back to work.
And I imagine there are some people who might be suffering in silence.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, we've seen a lot of individuals who have the ability to really take time off of work, have the financial means to get further evaluation, especially for a condition where insurance coverage is not exactly universal right now. What we're not seeing are individuals who don't have that luxury, individuals who may be working very laborious jobs that just won't let them have the ability to get off of work to go seek medical care. And I worry about those individuals. We haven't heard much about that patient population. Are they suffering in silence? Are they working while distracted and sometimes mm-hmm. unsafely because of these conditions? We really need to know more.
Dr. Byron, you heard Kirsten describe her story. Does that sound familiar to you? Have you heard this from other folks as well who are long haulers?
Yes. And her story reminds me is that when you think back before we had vaccines, you know, the initial reaction to recovering from COVID infection was elation. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I didn't end up in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I didn't die. And it was such a... for many people who have not faced that, was just a tremendous elation. And then to see that elation kind of slowly give away to this realization that this, yeah, I survived, but it's not over. And I survived something that isn't, you know, it's good to be alive, but it's not what I was hoping for.
Yeah, it sounds...
And it's not what we, you know, it's... Go ahead.
I was going to say, it sounds depressing.
It is. And so that's... Depression and anxiety are some of the mood changes that we can see as post-COVID or long-haul COVID symptoms. But part of the question is that due to a direct effect of the COVID infection and somehow the relationship between an infection and our brain or our immune system and the brain? Or is that just us, you know, just Kirsten trying to grasp and grapple with this, you know, new, if you will, disability? Mm.
So, Dr. Byron, when does an infection become long-haul COVID versus just recovering being sick with COVID? Like, what's the distinction there?
Yeah, so, you know, it's difficult to put a number, but I think in order to study this, scientists have kind of said, let's make a draw a line in the sand. And the line in the sand is people are experiencing either new symptoms or returning symptoms, so they got better, and then the symptoms came back, or just ongoing symptoms at 4 weeks, 4 weeks from their initial infection, then we would put them in the long-haul COVID mm-hmm. Category. Yes.
And are there other illnesses that have long-term symptoms like this?
Well, that's the interesting part of it, is that there is some historical precedent for this long-haul COVID. There are a lot of coronaviruses that have been out there. Most of them have just been kind of the standard sort of cold sort of things, and you wouldn't have known that you had that kind of coronavirus. But this new, if you will, unimproved, more lethal variety, like the original SARS, or this thing called MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, mm-hmm. both of those were coronaviruses that were much, much, much more serious and much more lethal than previous. And when scientists go back and look at patients who had those two infections, yes, they had a lot of ongoing symptoms similar to what we're seeing with this with SARS-CoV-2.
Let's open up the phone lines and talk to some of our listeners as we talk about people who have experienced lingering symptoms after recovering from COVID-19. Has a doctor told you that you may have long-haul COVID? And I want to know, how has it affected your life? The number is 651-227-6000, or you can call us at 800-242-2828 as we talk with two doctors. In St. Paul, Jenny is on the phone. And Jenny, what did you want to share with us about long-haul COVID?
Well, I'm 76. I was 74 still when I got COVID a year ago, July. Mm-hmm. And I was elated, like your doctor said, that I didn't have a, I had a mild case of COVID, but I didn't have chest congestion, but I had stomach, I was sick to my stomach. And it hurt when I ate, and I've never experienced that, even as a pregnant mother years ago. But it that sick to my stomach hung on for about 5 months, and I lost not too much weight, but I mean like maybe about 9 pounds on an already pretty fit and thin frame, and then I just was tired. I was just tired and tired. And in February, when my husband and I both got those shots, just as like soon as we could, I felt somewhat better. But I still experienced this fatigue. And when the allergy season started, my vertigo was it was just terrible. I am going to see an ENT, takes months to get an appointment over at the university about that vertigo. But when I got this booster shot, I felt so much better. I don't know if it has to do with that, but I just feel like my old self.
You're feeling
energetic and peppy and
back to normal now.
Back to normal. I mean, just really amazing. And I, you know, it's hard to know when you're 76 how to put all this together.
Right.
You know, what's aging, what's long haul COVID, what's something else. But I have a lot of arthritis now, just terrible in both of my thumbs.
That you didn't have before.
I had it a little bit before, you know, like I had the vertigo somewhat before. I had, you know, so you can't, I can't say that it's directly related to COVID.
Well, Jenny, thank you for calling and sharing what you've been through this journey over the last year. That's Jenny in St. Paul. Let's take another phone call as we talk about long-haul COVID and the lingering symptoms in Minneapolis. Amy is on the phone. Amy, what do you want to tell us?
Thank you, Angela, for taking my call. I'm really interested to hear what the experts have to say. Uh-huh. I have a 14-year-old son, and he had COVID a year ago. And then he was pretty sick, but he recovered quickly. And then he was vaccinated in May and got a second shot in June, had a good reaction. Then he was diagnosed again in September on the 29th. And he wasn't as sick this time around, so I urge everyone to get their shots. But he went back to school on, I think, the 11th of October, and yesterday was the first day that he could actually make it a whole day at school. I've been lucky to be able to go and pick him up in the middle of the day and bring him to and from school, because he usually just walks a mile to school and walks a mile home with no problem. I mean, he's not a frail kid, but he's just so exhausted that he can't make it through a full day of school. And after 2 weeks of that, I took him back to the doctor, and they did some blood tests, and they said his vitamin D is really low, his iron is low, but his ferritin level is high, or his iron was normal, but his ferritin level was high.
So he's 14, and he's experiencing a lot of fatigue. And when did he get his second COVID case? When did that happen? What month was that?
September 29th.
September 29th. All right. Well, let's ask, you know, Dr. Van, what do you hear there, a 14-year-old who is still dealing with fatigue?
Yeah. So first of all, I'm sorry to hear about your son's symptoms, but I'm glad that he's making a recovery. You know, I will say that your story is very consistent with what I've seen in other patients who have gotten the vaccine. There are breakthrough cases, as we all know. Those cases do tend to be less severe. And some patients are having a longer recovery, even what we would call long haul COVID, associated with this. But personally, in our clinic, I would say that the patients that I have seen in this scenario, they also seem to be recovering from the prolonged symptoms more quickly than my patients from last year. And that fits with the story that you're sharing. And so I would have hope and faith that this is going to resolve itself here after just a few more weeks. And I will say also that, you know, the lack of, you know, diagnostic findings on testing is something that we often have seen with this condition. It can sometimes be frustrating for patients, but just remember this is a new condition. And what that means to me when we see these normal results is that we haven't quite figured out yet what's the best thing to test for in order to determine if someone has long-haul COVID.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about long-haul COVID, those lingering symptoms that go on for months, even after you've recovered from COVID-19. The number is 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828 as we talk with two doctors. In Minneapolis, Ree is on the phone. And Ree, what's going on with you?
Hello.
Hi.
Well, I am a long-haul patient. I'm a flight attendant also, so we're a highly exposed group of people.
Yes.
I think at first, in the beginning of the pandemic, people kind of didn't think of us as frontline, so we didn't have a lot of protection. I had COVID the first time in March 2020, and then again in January. A lot of people weren't really aware that people could get COVID twice, and I was not vaccinated yet because we weren't in the front of the list to be vaccinated. So after I had it in January 2021, a month after I recovered, my body started to have a lot of different symptoms, and I'm still working through at the HCMC COVID long haul clinic. And I've also taken out loans to have a lot of extra care to, you know, to really fight to get better. I'm in my 40s. I had no pre-existing conditions.
Ree, tell me more about your symptoms. What are you? Is it the brain fog? Is it the fatigue? What is it?
Sure. So first, after I recovered, I started having a lot of hard time breathing. So I went back to work and trying to walk through the airport with my luggage and everything. I was really struggling with my breathing. And then a couple weeks later, my body went into fight or flight. I had never been diagnosed with any anxiety before. It was like my body felt like it was in danger, and it kind of stuck like that literally for 3 months, like 24/7. So I had to take time off work again. Got on an anxiety medication that I requested because I wanted to see if that would help. With that, I've gotten that a little bit more under control now, but it wasn't like, I know earlier in the call or in the show, you were talking about the possibility of people having anxiety that could have been induced by the virus, or if it was just from, you know, experiencing what they were going through.
Right.
But mine definitely came on in, you know, suddenly, and it was literally like a fight or flight type response, and it did last a very long time. So it was not like a typical, I just have some anxiety, you know?
And so this treatment you're getting at the long haul clinic, you say there at Hennepin Healthcare, is it helping the treatment?
I think I've gone through phases. You know, at first, it was overwhelming because you go to a doctor and then they recommend you to a lot of different specialists and trying to get all those appointments when you're tired, really fatigued, and you know, going to work and trying to get in all those appointments. But
right.
I think, you know, something kicked in for me where I was like, I can't stay like this forever. I really want to feel alive again. It almost felt like it would have been easier not to make it at times, honestly. Because, you know, and a lot of people at first didn't know anything about COVID long haul. So you felt really alone. And so there started to be more of a community of people
Who
were perfectly healthy discussing what was happening.
Well, that's why we wanted to talk about it today. Ree, I hope your recovery goes well in the months ahead. Thank you for sharing your story. Dr. Byron, in your experience, who is most susceptible to long-haul COVID? Do there appear to be people who are more vulnerable to it?
Well, it turns out anybody can get it. Anybody of any age. There was the caller who had the 14-year-old boy. It does seem to be less common in the pediatric population, but can still happen. This is one of the things, there are lots of things about this that are a bit puzzling, but one of the things that doesn't really make, isn't all that logical, is that you would think that the people who would most likely get long haul COVID are people who had profound symptoms, people were in the hospital or people almost in the hospital. People were really laid up. But that's not really how it's turning out to be. It looks like people who had even a mild case or even an asymptomatic case where they hardly knew that they were infected can go on to have these profound symptoms. And that's sort of a disconnect, because you would think a serious infection would be most likely to give you these kind of serious long symptoms. But that's not been the case. It looks like it's more women than men. It's not profoundly so, but more likely to affect women.
Mm-hmm.
The last caller, that's a difficult, really difficult situation to be in. And it's interesting that because I think the medical community has been otherwise occupied and also hasn't had a lot of answers, there are a lot of grassroots organizations on Facebook, et cetera, of linking people who are dealing with this together so that they don't have to feel like, is it just me?
Right. And then she said that, it is very distressing for me to hear people share their stories, and particularly Ree there, the flight attendant, talking about how it affected her work life, her shortness of breath as she's walking through the airport and the anxiety. And Dr. Van, have you found that, that as people discover that there are other people like them, that that's helpful to them in the recovery?
Yes, that has been extremely rewarding for patients, and actually probably one of the most therapeutic things that we can do for patients who are suffering this. Now, there's one universal thing that I've seen amongst patients with this condition. It's that they feel very alone and abandoned when they come to visit with us.
Right.
They've been told that their symptoms don't make sense, or perhaps it's all anxiety or depression basically in their head. And frankly, some people come to us just questioning their sanity. And after we hear their stories, we share with them that, yes, your symptoms are consistent with hundreds of other individuals out there. And we let them know that they're not alone. And this has been very therapeutic for patients.
And we mentioned in the intro that studies show that it's anywhere between 10 and 30% of COVID patients who develop these long-term side effects. But that's a pretty big range. So why don't we know how many people are actually getting long-haul COVID, Dr. Van?
Well, many of the early studies looked at very specific patient populations, patients coming out of the hospital, patients abroad, and so forth, patients in the ICU. So it's taken some time for us to get more of a population-based assessment of how common this condition is. Unfortunately, as time goes on, it seems like the numbers are increasing the percentage-wise. 10 to 30% is often the conservative estimate, I quote, but I do know that there was a recent study in the Journal of the American Medical Association that came out in October that found a presence of almost 50% of patients experiencing symptoms somewhere around 9 months out. So I think more and more folks are finally coming to care and be willing to step up and report their symptoms. Of course, that hesitancy in the past has been another reason why it's been hard to get a good idea of how frequent this is going to be.
We're getting lots of phone calls from listeners as we talk about long-haul COVID, those lingering symptoms months after recovering from COVID-19. And as we talk with two doctors, we are taking your phone calls. I want to take a moment now to check in with Phil Picardi to see what's going on in the news. Hi, Phil. Yes, 1A with Jen White is next at 10 a.m. here on NPR News. Then at noon, be sure to listen to Minnesota Now, hosted by Kathy Werzer. Tomorrow morning at 9, it's Veterans Day, and we're asking veterans to call us with their stories. And I want to know this. What does the phrase, "thank you for your service," mean to you? How does military service change lives? That's tomorrow morning at 9. Right now on the podcast for this program, you can listen to the conversation we had yesterday about the challenges of childcare from the perspective of childcare providers who are dealing with an enrollment drop, a labor shortage, burnout, all while recognizing the financial hardships of parents. Our callers added a lot to that discussion as well. Check it out on the podcast. Just search for NPR News with Angela Davis wherever you get your podcast.
Support comes from the Minnesota Historical Society. Experience Christmas 1910 at the St. Paul Mansion of Railroad Titan James J. Hill, now through December 31st. Includes access to holiday-themed exhibits and a 60-minute guided tour. mnhs.org/holiday.
Support comes from Delta Dental of Minnesota Foundation, making dental care possible for Minnesotans in need by funding nonprofit dental clinics, expanded dental workforce, and school-based programs to improve oral health. DeltaDentalMN.org/NPR.
Now back to the conversation about long-haul COVID and what doctors now know about the condition, how to treat it, and its impact. Long haulers, as they are called, are people who contracted COVID-19 and then recovered, but months later still struggle with symptoms like brain fog, fatigue, headaches, shortness of breath, and anxiety. My guests today include Dr. Greg Vanishkashorn, or Dr. Van, as he's called. Dr. Van is an occupational and aerospace medicine specialist who leads the COVID Activities Rehabilitation Program at Mayo Clinic. Also on the line, we have Dr. Craig Bowen, a physician and a writer based here in St. Paul. And we're taking your phone calls. Are you a long hauler? How has it affected your life? What questions do you have for the doctors? Call us at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. We're getting lots of phone calls, so let's go back to the phones and let's talk to Krista in Minneapolis. And Krista, what is going on with you?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had COVID about a year ago, right over Thanksgiving, and I started having symptoms actually just as I was getting better, but you know, they got new and different and kind of changed. And I've had great doctors who have all, you know, none of them have questioned whether or not I had these issues, but kind of the consensus was, we don't know what this is exactly, but so far it looks like most people get better. But now where I'm at now is it's actually gotten worse over the last year. And I was just, diagnosed with chronic fatigue from long haul COVID. And, one thing she said is, you know, my doctor was like, you need to really rest, because every time you push yourself and you have a crash, you kind of put yourself at risk of getting worse. And that was one thing that had never really been spelled out for me. And I'm only been working part-time this last year, but I'm kind of have a really strong work ethic, and I'm used to myself being so active and so able to just really like power through and be fine and, you know, get through it and just do so much that I would push myself when I felt like I had to get something done. I had to, you know, do more. I'm now at a spot where I'm just
difficult.
Like,
yeah, it yeah. sounds very and difficult.
It's, financially, it's really, you know, I can't continue doing what I'm doing physically, but also it is no longer supporting me financially. And that's very terrifying, because I'm young. I'm in my 30s. Mm-hmm. It's been very taxing. And I think even though maybe for some people, you know, do what you can when you can, I think had I been told earlier, do less than you think you can, I may have not put myself where I am now.
Krista, thank you. And I'm sorry that you're going through everything you've described. Dr. Bowen, what advice do you have for people who are having long-term symptoms? Because I'm sure it's very difficult to hear the words, just wait, it'll get better.
Yeah, you know, Krista's description of her fatigue brings up this concept of a particular type of fatigue that we see with other, fatigue syndromes, and it's called post-exertional malaise. Now, you know, physicians, we like to use $25 terms when a $5 term will work, but it's an odd kind of, or a severe form of fatigue where just a little, they have a, let's say, you know, you go out inside, you need to rake the leaves, and that rest of the day you seem to be fine, but then after that, not immediately afterwards, you come into the house and collapse. But sometimes 12 to 48 hours later, all of a sudden, boom, the floor drops out and you're just exhausted. And they can take days or even weeks to come out of that trough. And so for those people, the advice is to be very careful about overexerting yourself. You may kind of tip over the edge and where it takes you a long time to come back. Post-exertional malaise.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about long-haul COVID in Minneapolis. Peter is on the phone. Peter, what is going on with you?
Good morning, Angela. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I contracted COVID almost 8 months ago. Just had one dose about 5 days prior to coming down and being extremely sick, being admitted ultimately into the ER with extremely low oxygen levels. But I still feel it in my chest. I ended up going back to the ER maybe a month or so after contracting it, and with some issues in my chest. They did a battery of tests and everything came back with no issues, and still, again, carried in my chest, physically fit, have always been so, in my 50s, but back to working out again. I can't do anything too extreme, and I'll let my dog out in the middle of the night and come back up, and I can just hear myself wheezing and trying to catch my breath just from coming back up the stairs. And then I've also, hearing a caller say this earlier, I have issues, kind of a pain in my elbows. I don't know if that's the arthritis feeling. Mm-hmm. And then some fatigue as well.
Wow. And then what are your doctors telling you?
You know, I haven't been back to the doctor since that last ER visit. So I plan to do that to see. I haven't been diagnosed with anything. I haven't been back. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I want to do that in the near term.
All right. That's Peter. Peter, thank you for sharing your story. Dr. Van, you know, a lot of the folks that have called in today, I believe they contracted COVID before the vaccines were available. So I'm wondering, does vaccination affect your chances of getting these long haul symptoms? Do we know yet?
You know, right now, we don't know yet. I mean, of course, the best way to prevent getting long haul COVID is to prevent getting COVID in the first place. And right. We know the vaccine will help with that. But for those folks who do get this and have a breakthrough, it's too early to say whether or not there will be less long-haul COVID in these individuals. Mm-hmm. As I did mention earlier, though, when it does happen, it does seem to be a faster resolution than the folks who got long-haul COVID before they were vaccinated.
And before I forget, I want to ask you this. People often talk about antibodies after being sick with COVID. And, you know, can you get sick with COVID again if you have antibodies from a previous infection? Because I think there's some confusion about that.
Great point. Something that I get asked quite a bit from my patients, because we have to be different antibody panels and levels and things like that. Overall, we have not found a good way to correlate a person's immunity with the antibody level. So we actually don't recommend individuals check those as part of their decision of whether or not to get vaccinated or to assess if the vaccine has worked. We, of course, can do this to see if someone has had an infection in the past few months. But right now, the science isn't there yet for us to be able to use that as an indication for future immunity.
Let's take another phone call as we talk about long haulers, people who have recovered from COVID but still have symptoms that are changing and impacting their lives. In Minneapolis, Brian is on the phone. And Brian, what do you want to tell us?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think a lot of people, you know, like me, have had, you know, long COVID for over the past year. You feel like you're wow. crazy and you feel like you're alone. And so it's been so great to hear of other people sharing similar stories, because many of us seek medical care and then work with providers sometimes who are stumped about what's happening. But for me, long COVID has resulted in a lot of physical changes in my body mechanics. You know, for example, you know, I can relate to the, you know, post-exercise malaise and other fatigue people have experienced. But if I go from a sitting to a standing or laying to a standing position, my heart rate accelerates and I get really dizzy. And there's been times where I have quite literally passed out. You know, many times I have to revert back to a laying position, you know, and my, you know, my heart rate's much faster than it was pre-COVID. And, you know, and I've had other changes, you know, to my body, swelling in my hands and feet. You know, I have circulation issues, all of these things that, you know, I didn't have before I had, you know, COVID. You know, before I had COVID, I was the healthy runner type. And, you know, I haven't been able to perform exertional exercise in, you know, over the past year, you know, and I have a whole range of very strange symptoms that I'm contending with that have, you know, just changed my, you know, quality of life quite greatly.
Brian, it sounds exhausting.
It is. And, you know, and it, you know, I think having, you know, these symptoms, it's just really confusing. And, you know, you seek medical care and, you know, you see a cardiologist or something and they can run a screen and maybe, you know, they pick up some heart arrhythmias or other things, but they're really not sure what's going on. And they'll tell you, well, you don't need a pacemaker. You know, you're just below, you know, other levels of clinical significance where you don't need a beta blocker, you know, so we don't know what to do. And, you know, and you're like, well, I'm not normal. I didn't feel this way before. I wasn't having these symptoms before, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of the medical community stumped about, you know, what to do about a whole range of symptoms that people are having that aren't just fatigue. And I can speak to the fatigue that is intense and it is, mm-hmm. you know, it's like being struck with kryptonite. Wow. We don't think we know what that really is like, but that's the only thing I can describe it. It's like you've been struck with kryptonite and you can't get out of bed.
And this has been going on a year for you.
For over a year. And I think slowly the fatigue is getting a little bit better. But the, you know, other changes, the circulation issues, my hands swelling and my hands and feet kind of turning, you know, white, you know, and, you know, kind of the heart rate issues haven't resolved themselves, you know, even over a year later mm-hmm. since I acquired COVID.
All right. Thank you. That's Brian in Minneapolis. Let's take a phone call from Sioux Falls. Pamela is on the phone. And Pamela, what can you tell us about COVID or long haul symptoms?
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning.
Hi.
I actually have a little bit of a different perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm both a nurse and I also have had fibromyalgia for a little bit more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm just struck and have been struck ever since COVID came on the scene by long-haul COVID patients and physicians. And so much of what I hear from symptoms to difficulty with diagnoses to difficulty finding effective treatments to how it upends your lifestyle, so much of it I can relate to because I've gone through the same things as a fibromyalgia patient. I'm still able to work, but I can only work part-time because if I tried to work full-time, that's literally all I could do is I would work and I would come home and I would be in bed the days off. My question for your two guests this morning is I'm wondering, because I know healthcare professionals like to chew things over with each other. are you hearing anything from your colleagues about the symptom overlap with long-haul COVID and other chronic conditions like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, chronic Lyme disease? Is it possible that someday down the road we may find these are not all separate conditions, but one condition that might be triggered mm-hmm. by different things? I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that.
All right, that's Pamela in Sioux Falls. Dr. Van, doctor's there at Mayo Clinic. You like to chew things over together, she says. What are your thoughts about that? Are there some other conditions that seem similar to what folks with long-haul COVID are describing?
Absolutely. Long-haul COVID does share a lot of characteristics with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. And many of the treatment philosophies that we use for those conditions, we also apply successfully to long-haul COVID, especially the part about proper pacing and not pushing too much and being mindful about that post-exertional malaise. We also know that chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, that can sometimes be preceded, at least what we have seen in literature, by other viral illnesses like Lyme's disease or mono, for example. So the idea that a viral infection could result in chronic symptoms like this and is not unknown. And there could be a possibility that we are dealing with one condition that is all stemming from a very common inflammatory or infectious process. The similarities are so similar that we even work very closely with our chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia specialists here at Mayo Clinic. And there is actually a second clinic here called the Post-COVID Care Clinic that uses a lot of those treatment strategies for those conditions to help patients who are suffering from some of the more long-term symptoms. But the flip side of that is that this comparison often sometimes gets people discouraged because we've known about chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia for a long period of time, and we haven't been able to figure out what's the best diagnostic test or what are the definitive treatments. But I'm hoping that with everything that we have seen with long-haul COVID, this is going to light a fire in the research areas, and we've already seen this, and that we're going to have a lot more answers for both long-haul COVID and fibromyalgia as we go forward over the next year.
And Dr. Byron, anything you can contribute to that as you've written about what we've seen with COVID over the last year and a half?
Yeah, no, I agree totally with Dr. Van. The bad news, of course, is that 10 to 30% of a very large number is a very large number of people who could be suffering from long-haul COVID. But this is really a unique chance, and that volume of people and that level of interest really hopefully will fuel much more research into all these things that some of these things, chronic fatigue syndrome, we've been puzzling over that since the 1980s. Mm-hmm. There was a predecessor to that called myalgic myeloencephalitis that probably was started in the 30s. So these things have been around, and hopefully we're going to be able to figure out, is there some kind of key basic element that ties all those things together? So in some ways, it's exciting.
Right. Let's take another phone call. In Minneapolis, Kelly's on the phone. Kelly, what did you want to share or ask?
Hi, thank you. I have been sick since March of 2020. And the issue I've been running into is finding care without a positive COVID test, because I was sick so early in the pandemic that I wasn't even able to seek a test because I wasn't hospitalized. And I'm curious how these specialty clinics and studies are handling folks who aren't able to come in with that proof of COVID infection, who are suffering, 18 months out from being sick.
Dr. Van?
Yep, very good point again. So early on, when we first started treating this condition in our clinics, we had to rely on a patient having a positive PCR test or an antibody test, because the volume was simply through the roof for people who needed care. And the condition is so nebulous, it's very difficult to tell what's related to a COVID-19 infection or not. As time has gone on, we've become more aware, in the medical world, that testing, even antibody testing months after initial infection, was something that was not easy to get for a lot of individuals early on in the pandemic. And so while we still like to have someone have a positive test, we also review each case individually to see if the story fits. And if the story does seem to fit, then we start treatment, the same for our other patients who do have a positive test.
All right. I'm going to take one more phone call before we're out of time. In Shoreview, Michelle is on the line, and Michelle has a good question I want to share. Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi. Yeah, my mom has had long-haul COVID, and she, just like a lot of people who spoke today, has had all the tests, all the specialists, and things that, can't be clear what's actually causing her to be so debilitated still, to the point where she has not hardly left our home for the last year. And she was denied long-term disability. And I'm wondering, what are the resources available to people that are in this situation where medically it's like a conundrum still? Right. So then it's kind of leaving them without resources.
Right. Thank you, Michelle. So Dr. Byron, any advice there to declare or to apply for long-term disability to prove that you have these symptoms and you can't work?
Dr. Van might address that better than I, but I do know that it's now long-haul COVID has officially been recognized.
Officially recognized.
Disability.
All right. Dr. Van, long-term disability, if someone wants to apply for that, what do you recommend?
Right. So I recommend speaking with a provider that is used to working in these arenas. It's amazing. One of the hardest things to do for medical providers, or get medical providers to do, is to fill out a form. I have an entire career in medicine because of forms. It does take a bit of expertise to go through this. The word disability can mean a lot of different things. There's short-term disability and long-term disability associated with employment. There's also disability, of course, from Social Security, and each one of them have their nuances. So my overall advice is, first, don't be afraid to advocate and seek advice and help from the right providers, particularly occupational medicine providers in this area. As Dr. Barr mentioned, this is something that has been recognized by the ADA finally, but just because of that doesn't mean that Social Security necessarily has everything in their set up. It's going to take a long time to get Social Security disability for this condition, so it's better to start earlier than later.
All right, Dr. Van, Dr. Barwin, we're out of time, but thank you for your expertise you're able to share, and thank you to all of our listeners who called in. Dr. Greg Van there is at Mayo Clinic, and Dr. Craig Barwin is in St. Paul, a physician and a writer. Thank you so much. Everyone, be safe. Take care of yourselves. This conversation today was produced by Samantha Matsumoto, and we will talk with you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.